Okay, I'm Dick Blumker, and this is a Monday morning Bible study. And today we're going to take a reflective look at the seventh day of creation.
It's Plaid Day.
And this is also Plaid Day in Holden Village. And the wonderful variety of creation is all around us. As I've sort of listened to what I've heard in sessions and in Bible studies the last few days since I've been here, I really feel we've talked about, from the first creation story, all 7 days of creation. I think we've certainly focused on a need to care for the earth. We've lifted the human role as being the last creature to be created, which puts us in a position of being absolutely dependent upon all the other creatures for our existence, but also being in a role of being responsible for in this relational creation that God has put us within. And so that we're called to care for every other creature and even called to name the creatures and care for them by name. And I've heard also some discussion about the transcendence of God and the immanence of God, or God in creation. And I thought it would be helpful to reflect a little bit more on God in creation, or God with us. And one of the people that's been most helpful for me in dealing with that is Jürgen Moltmann. In his book, God in Creation, that little German thing that I still don't quite understand. And so I'm going to take a first shot at this with you, and I hope that we can have some discussion as we go, especially since it's the first shot. And then I'd like us to sort of end the session with a couple passages from the New Testament as well. First of all, the passage that I'd like to refer to, the obvious one, is Genesis chapter 1, verses 31 through chapter 2, verse 3. And God saw everything. Now, I have a Revised Standard, and there are a lot of he's in this, so you'll just have to be forgiving, some of you. And God saw everything he had made, and behold, it was very good. And there was evening, and there was morning, a sixth day. Thus the heavens and the earth were finished, and all the hosts of them. And on the seventh day God finished his work which he had done, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work which he had done. So God blessed the seventh day and hallowed it, and because on it God rested from all his work which he had done in creation. I think usually when we think about the creation story, we think about everything that God created. In other words, we reflect most often on the 6 days of creation rather than 7 days. And maybe one reason for that is that, at least on first reading, it appears that God really didn't do anything at all on the seventh day, that God just rested. And after all, what is so creative about resting? You know, we can talk about restful time as being recreative time, but in the context of the creation story, since God had just finished, and since God really doesn't get that tired, at least I assume God doesn't, God really doesn't need recreation, and you assume that when it's just finished, there's no need, at least initially, for recreation. I'd like to look at this again and just realize that a couple of points from the text. First of all, it says that God had finished creating, but God finishes his work on the seventh day, not on the sixth day. And God finishes the work of creation by resting. And so the seventh day is blessed. And that really causes me to raise some questions. Well, what does it mean to finish by resting? And what is God really doing when God is resting? Obviously, there are 7 days in the creation story, and I'm sure you all know that in the Jewish mind, the number seven there occurs because seven is the number of perfection or completion. The number of six, by the way, is a number for evil. I think it's very interesting to reflect on creation without the seventh day and the concept of evil. And you may want to get into that later, but I think it's an appropriate thing at least to put in the back of our minds and think about. What does it mean for God to rest? What is God really doing on the seventh day? What does it mean, in other words, in chapter 2, verse 3, that God blessed and hallowed the seventh day because on it God rested from creating? Now, we know from the story that God creates everything and everything out of nothing. And it's perfectly obvious from the first 6 days that God is a good worker. But how is God as a rester? What about this other side of God? It would be very easy to take some easy outs on this. I think we Americans, most often in our cultural religions that we've developed, take an approach like deism, where we say, oh yeah, this is it. Now God's finished. This wonderful thing is all wound up, you know, and God is now just going to sit back and watch it unwind and watch the whole thing develop and without being involved at all, except maybe once in a while throwing in a little bit of truth here and there by sending someone, and especially by sending Jesus. But we know from the creation story that God creates everything out of love. And God's love is shown in more than just the creatures or absolutely everything that's created. There's more to it than that. On the seventh day, God rested. On the seventh day, in resting, God doesn't dominate the creation or the world. But on the seventh day, God rather feels the world. God allows God's self to be affected by the whole creation, to be touched by each creature, and to become in that relationship absolutely inseparable from absolutely everything that God creates. So God allows this whole community of creation to become even God's own environment. Now I see that as limiting God's self. And we talk about that as Christians when we talk about the incarnation. And I think there are direct parallels, and I see the incarnation as a continuation of the creation story. The Hebrew terminology, I think, for this is the Shekinah. Maybe some of you know more about that than I do, but it is part of the tradition. The God being with creation and suffering with creation. Now, I don't think that always comes easy for us, and I know it's not coming easy for the Jewish community. I was able to be in Israel a couple of times on two freebie trips as a pastor. And on our second trip, our tour guide was an Austrian Jew who had been there since the late 40s and who had gone through the Holocaust and who had been captured in northern Africa, should have died in a coal mine there and escaped again, and went through this whole process of getting to Israel. And he was just a wonderful person to take us through. And of course he gave us the Jewish perspective of Israel too. But I remember being outside of the Museum for the Holocaust in Jerusalem. And just as we'd come out, we were looking at all the trees that were planted there from various people from around the world. I asked him, is it possible for you, a contemporary Jew, to believe in the Shekinah, the God with us in our suffering, in the creation? And he just looked at me and shook his head and said, never, never. It's not an easy thing to do. But I believe there's evidence of it in the Old Testament, and certainly in the creation story. On the Sabbath, the history of the world begins. God is in, God is with, God is inseparable from the creation. Now, I don't mean just human history. It was so helpful at Batten's this morning, but all of history, all of geological history and the whole works, and not just human history. And the story is very clear, it seems to me. Human beings are only part of the creation. We're not the whole thing. And there is a humbling effect that comes from this that I think we all really need and we need to maintain. If we only see 6 days of creation, then all we're going to see, all we're going to experience, is a transcendent God. But in the Sabbath, we see God's immanence, God in God's works. And within those works, God allows each and everything to exist and exist within God's presence, before God's presence, and God is present in and with absolutely everything. The Sabbath blessing is another topic that comes up here that is just so wonderful. I understand Old Testament blessing, at least in part, as in the creation story, as God's being with each creature, empowering it to become what it is created to be. So that the role of every other creature in living in this wonderful relational symbiotic, you know, environment, the role of every creature, including the human creature, is to empower everything to become and to be what it was created to be. The Sabbath blessing wakens the joy of being creatures in all in all its splendor, you know, and that's part of who we are, is to live out the joy of life, you know, and as much as we need to dwell and care and work hard at caring for the creation, you know, life is sort of paradoxical. On the other hand, we need to experience the joy of creation and to celebrate life. And to show our trust and faith in God, that indeed God is still the Creator, and to thank God for that. The Sabbath is the time that blessing takes place. Isaiah 6:3 reads, "When the whole earth is full of His glory." The Sabbath also opens the future, and through the blessing and through this God's presence. And because of God's presence, every creature has a future. And so all of creation becomes open-ended, you know, and moving towards a wonderful, wonderful future. Another thing that happens on the Sabbath for human beings is that in our resting, we cease our intervening in creation. And I think that's hard for us to do. We just let the earth be entirely God's earth and not ours. And we take time for that and praise God and worship God and reflect upon the earth and all of life coming from God, being God's, and certainly being reconciled by God. In the first creation story of Genesis, we don't see a Sabbath as a day followed by 6 days of work. But the whole work of creation was performed for the sake of the Sabbath. It all leads up to the Sabbath. Notice that all the other 6 days of creation end with night or with darkness. There's no night on the Sabbath. You know? And it's there for a purpose. That there's, you know, there's a point to be made from that. That the Sabbath rest is what this is all about. It's a feast without end, we say, and that's where so much of our wonderful Eucharistic language, I believe, comes from. In the seventh day, we see that the world is not only created by God, but it exists before God and lives with God. On the Sabbath, God makes God's self receptive to the happiness, to the suffering, and to the praise of all creatures. On the Sabbath, the resting God begins to experience all the beings that God has created. And that's a sort of a summary of all of this, and I'd really like to throw this open for discussion now, and then take a look at several New Testament passages in closing. Yeah, that was about 15 minutes, so good. I was hoping we'd have time for that. Maybe I should have stopped in the middle, but this is my first time through doing this, so I would appreciate some comments.
A comment is that I'm confused.
Are you? Okay.
You read the Genesis account of the seventh day, which appears in only one account of creation. It doesn't
Correct.
Appear in the other.
Correct.
And from that seemed to derive some sense of the immanence of God, that God is in creation.
Mm-hmm.
But as I read those things, I don't understand where you get that. There seems to be kind of a leap from what's...
There's a leap.
Yeah, well, maybe explain the leap, because I don't understand the leap. How do you get from those texts to saying God is in the creation?
I'm not sure I can. It's how I understand it.
Okay.
All right. Yeah.
Well, that was the missing step.
Yeah, it is, and I understand that. And I've done some of this from memory, and I don't have certainly the Hebrew to help me do that, and I'm quite frankly not sure what's there. This is primarily from memory, from what I've read from Waltman, that I thought was a very helpful part of understanding the creation, and so I'm trusting him in that sense. So, yeah.
Can you give us the reference to Waltman's book?
Well, it's God in Creation.
God in Creation.
Mm-hmm. Jürgen Moltmann, yeah.
You know the publisher?
No. It's a big, thick thing. Yeah, it's a thick thing. Yeah. It's not something that just the average person would want to pick up and deal with. So it takes it. Yeah. But I think that's part of the problem of a lot of things that are being written right now. Is that people like him are writing, and they're so hard to, you know, I've read it through twice, and I don't think I quite understand it, but I still think it's worth raising the issues. But they're just not very accessible, and that I find that frustrating, in a sense. But there,
I understand what he said, what you said.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure.
You
not gets it from the.
Yeah, from the text. Yeah.
I mean, it's clear.
Yeah.
That's why it's God.
Yeah.
It's a whole tradition out of the process philosophy.
Yeah. I think what I want, and I'm not sure the New Testament readings we'll do in a few minutes are going to help a lot, but I think what really my purpose this morning was to get us to reflect on that. And if we can do that, that's fine with me. And in my journey, I'm going to be trying to make some of those connections. And I appreciate you raising that. I think that's important. And I knew that was coming. So, and that's all right. I can still live with that. I decided to do this instead of something else.
This is just a clarification. I came in a little bit late.
Yeah.
But are you saying that we are in the seventh day of creation, and that's why God is still... God.
Well, you can't say that.
Is the Sabbath that continues? Or?
Well, the Sabbath continues. The creation is open-ended. But we can't say that it's, obviously, with the development of species, and, we can't say that God has stopped or ceased creating either. So it's both. It's not.
Just to... indicate maybe how difficult it is to think in terms of this deep rest of God. I remember a story I heard from a pastor that I worked with who was telling a children's sermon, and he wanted to make the point that God is always there for people to call out to, invoke, to ask to be with you in difficult times and good times. But the way that he told the story was that he wanted, it was during the summer, he wanted to use the imagery of vacation. And so he said, you know, that there's one being that never takes a vacation, that never rests. And he hammered this over and over, that God doesn't rest. And he knows how to read his Bible, but that story of resting just never never seemed to connect with him. I was wondering if it might be helpful, or if you're planning to talk about the eighth day, the Jewish sense of the eighth day of creation.
No, I wasn't. Do you want to say, I'd appreciate your saying some things.
Well, it's a sense that that will be the day in which fulfillment comes, the sort of final Sabbath, final resting of creation. I don't know a great deal about it. I don't know, in fact, very much about it.
I don't either. I really don't. Maybe.
Is that in Revelation? Is that
it's also a Christian, mm-hmm. notion, too.
Because, you know, that kind of millennial goal mm-hmm. and dream is part of Barry's critique of the whole mm-hmm. historical context of the Christian message, that within history we would arrive at that. The other thing, Dick, and really help me with this, because I just have a sense that the nuances of our language, you know, come out of this deep biblical grounding, and whether or not that's being called into question, or you know, when you say something like, let the earth be entirely God's earth, does that reinforce the sense that it is all in God's hands and kind of lets us off the hook? Is that a subtle underpinning of that kind of biblical base, you know, that we're really calling into question in one way, that the earth has its own integrity and its own inner dynamic that it isn't like God intervening in an ongoing way, but the earth is unfolding in its own inner truthfulness, mm-hmm. you know? And that's what we've got to enter into and be processed with and be faithful in. Do you hear my query at all? We let ourselves, we keep taking ourselves out of the journey of the earth. And I don't want to say that God, you know, that it's not a sacred whatever, but I get uneasy kind of getting thrown back into somehow it's in God's hand.
Well, but the other side to that is that we also take God out.
Yeah.
You know, and the earth, at least as I understand the creation story, the earth is not unfolding without the presence of God. It's exactly because of the presence of God that the earth is unfolding.
Well, it's like the question that Einstein put, you know, did God have any choice in the creation? It's like somehow we don't really believe the dynamic that is in the very the very gut of the creation.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that is what's bugging me, and I don't know if it's a me and it's my problem, or it is something of this struggle that's going on today to identify.
But there's a part of this too. I mean, I'm certainly not suggesting that we take ourselves out of it, but perhaps in the Sabbath we can reflect upon what our part is, but certainly more on whose it is, and who really is in charge, putting it in basic language.
Well, I have a sense that what you're saying there is not so much separating oneself from the earth, because because it's not our responsibility to leave it all up to God, but more that the seventh day is the time to kind of take off our shoes and realize that the earth, maybe another way of putting it is that the earth is sacred in and of itself, apart from human interaction with it. That if, maybe as Jane is saying, it does have a life of its own, it is sacred, and that we recognize that and allow the earth to be God's or to be itself.
I would agree with that as long as we say that in that process we find that we are part of it. That when we say the earth, we mean ourselves too. And that's what happens. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I'm just thinking that the distinction is not so much that the earth is of God's, who's way out there, and that we are separate from it, but just that the earth is sacred in and of itself.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we can't make it sacred. Is that what you're... Yeah.
I see two issues emerging. One is, I think, as if I understand Jane's point, it is the character of God. Is God bound by the creation, by what has been created? Or is he God free? What's the nature of God? I think there's a dialectic there.
Mm-hmm.
Once the creation takes place, there are inner dynamics and laws and developments, but it's never determined, so that there is freedom and there isn't freedom. It's a dialectic always. And I think God has the dialectic in God's life. The other issue is the issue of whether we are the makers and shapers and co-creators, or whether we are created and shaped, and whether we don't need to stop and listen and reflect and receive, as over against making and shaping, receive life. And that's another issue. I get that clearly out of your presentation.
Mm-hmm.
That you quit making, shaping, controlling, forcing, dominating the world, and listen to the world. Listen to life. And reflect on life and receive somehow. And I like the word savor somehow. Savor life. And mm-hmm. What is? It's over against this. Busy making, shaping.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how you get that out. You can get that, I think, probably out of the seventh day rest. At least to stop the mad scramble to make and shape and create. But whether or not that means you receive, I think of a faculty member at the university who comes to church and opens the mail during church. It's very hard to get out of this world of making, shaping.
I think that's okay, Al, but if the savoring implies passivity, you know, if you sit around and savor something.
It does imply that one is the recipient and not the controller. It does imply passivity, Dan. But that's always in dialectic with the creation. That's why I think the 6 days and the seventh day are always The 6 days are creating in the seventh day. I don't mean that in any literal sense,
no,
figuratively.
But the Sabbath, I'd argue, shapes all the others, you know. And the others are for the Sabbath.
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
One doesn't listen. I think what we're trying to do here is listen.
Yeah.
In this conference, is listen to the earth. Listen to what the earth is saying. Really listen. And that's very hard.
Yeah, I feel like there's a question here, where here the part Jane's question raised, but that we haven't really got a hold of yet, and I'm not sure I've got a way of framing it. Well, I got a hold of it, but let me try to feel around the edges of this for just a minute. Seemingly, Jane's question was related to how do we understand this business of the earth as lords, and is it in a way a cop out of saying that it's all in God's hands and we don't have to worry about it? Then you brought up the idea of the co-creator responsibility. Together lead me to think in a way about the problem that Galileo had with Pope Urban VIII, and also this business of hearing the creation, because the question of what happens as a result of human, what happens as a result of the divine interaction, is very much at the root of what Galileo and Urban VIII were having their differences over. Galileo wanted to say that in understanding the future, in a way, or at least understanding or developing questions, answering questions as to what happens, that we should go and listen to the earth. As he put it, he says, I think that in discussions of physical problems, we ought to begin not from the authority of scriptural passages, but from sense experiences, you know, the listening, if you will, and the necessary demonstrations of what's going on. Nor is God any less basically revealed in nature's actions than in the sacred statements of the Bible. That is, that you can learn something of God from God's creation. And Urban VIII, his position was that there are no laws, physical laws, that are governing the creation, because God can run the creation by miracle. You know, one miracle after another, and therefore it's meaningless to think about there being physical laws. Now, at least in our experience since the Enlightenment, we don't see much evidence of God kind of intervening in a way to push aside, you know, the physical laws. So that we see things running pretty much, the physical laws explain a whole lot of what happens. so there, I guess, comes back into to my mind anyway. This question of how much or is there any human responsibility for the future of this creation? And when we say the earth is the Lord's, are we kind of falling back on Pope Urban's position that God's always there and the whole thing really is in God's hands, and when it gets bad enough, we can count on God creating a miracle that will get rid of all the pollution or whatever and put it all right again? That probably wasn't a question.
That's your question.
Yeah.
But does God work outside of human beings? I mean, would God set things aright without... I mean, I don't think that's the way God works. That's just my opinion. That the way God works in the world is through human beings. And yes, God works, but to affect and change the hearts and minds of human beings to help themselves, not physically making adjustments in the creation.
Why would you want to limit God to working solely through human beings?
Yeah.
That's the way I think God works in the world, but I wouldn't put that as a limit on God, certainly. That's the primary way I think God works in the world.
I think we live with that assumption a lot of the time. I really do. And I don't myself. The human community in Wisconsin was, the last couple of years, has sort of been looking at the greenhouse effect, but it really didn't get very many people's attention until the drought. And then it got a lot of people's attention. You know, it didn't work to speak through the human community, but it sure worked to speak through the land. I'm not sure. It was a very interesting experience to be part of.
May I just try one other tack on that? That if we really say that there is a continuum in the unfolding of the universe from the very beginning, and the journey of the universe, and the journey of the earth, of life, of consciousness, of human, is one story, then the human is the consciousness of the earth reflecting on itself. If we are faithful to that insight, you know, if we really believe that that's what is being shown to us empirically, that what is today had to have been there from the beginning, and this unfolding story is now at the point where the human is the consciousness of the earth reflecting on itself and taking control of the earth in a way that has not been there in 15 billion. Then the whole question of co-creation, you know, is that we really and truly are the ones who are determining the future of the earth now through conscious human activity that has not been before. This is an unfolding story. We are in the process of discovering what the earth is. And that's so different from the earth as created and given. And we, you know, have played a role with a given versus a time developmental unfolding that casts the whole debate in a very different context.
The question though, Jane, is what you think the earth is.
Well, it is.
I mean, if you think it's just physical and chemical laws, And that's the whole of.
We couldn't be even thinking about it if it were not more than just physical law.
You know, all of modern experience points to the fact that there are biological causative factors, physical causative factors, sociological causative factors, psychological causative factors, and the question is, are there not causative factors other than those which are functioning, which we can call divine reality?
Chardano called it psychic, you know, a consciousness there from the very beginning, a holy interior within the whole unfolding story.
Can we say, my point with this, and it's a point of clarification, it's not, certainly not me personally disagreeing with that point of view at all, Jane, because I think it's, I really resonate to a lot of those things, but I get nervous when we use the word co-creator, just in terms of language. I function in a co-pastorate where we're equals. I mean, the congregation works so hard at keeping us equals that sometimes, you know, it's wonderful. But we're not dealing with this on an equal level, I don't think. We don't mean that, do we? And so I wonder if that language might, you know, I mean, there's a point where you could argue that raises the human being to a position that really really may not be warranted, and it may even get us into a lot of trouble if we're not careful. You see what I mean? That could be just a spiritual reflection upon, you know, and I don't hear you saying this, but it could become spiritual arrogance as opposed to sexual arrogance of abuse of the creation, neglecting, lifting ourselves to a position which we really don't have.
I have trouble with that language, Jane. I know it's almost a direct quote from Tom Berry, and I have trouble with it when he says it, because I don't really understand what it means. But for me, what I find myself able to say is what I said in the beginning of that letter to the bishops, and that is that for the first time in history, we human beings are having, we're impacting the creation in an unprecedented way.
Oh, yes.
There's no time in the past, and humans have done some very destructive things, but no time in the past have we intervened in a way in which we're threatening the life support systems of the entire planet. Now, in that sense, it seems to me that human beings and human actions and human numbers are combining to have a very pronounced effect on the future of the planet. Now, whether you want to say that's as a result of human intelligence reflecting on itself, or reflecting on the creation, I don't know. But it does seem to me that in a way we're having an effect on the creation that is, the things are happening to it that I don't believe God wanted to happen.
No.
And in a way, I think we have to take some responsibility for it. And in as much as we're determining the future of the whole planet, we have in some ways become co-creator with God. And whether that's something that was there from the very beginning, or whether it's something that we have gradually assumed, I don't know. But it seems to me we're doing some things that I don't think we can blame God for.
I don't recognize it as very creative, or in that sense.
No, I think it hinges on the term co-creator. Mm-hmm. I think there's a certain creative aspect to humanity that is indicated in the Genesis story of being in the image of God, implying an ability to create. But I'm not sure that what you're describing is creation, or simply the power to change one's environment. And that may be creative, but it may not be.
What's creative in the sense of producing change, determinative?
Mm-hmm. Shall
That's
we?
That's a concept of image of God that we didn't know before.
Yeah.
We spent a couple of days on image of God in the first biblical session. Mm-hmm.
here's something that has to do with being creative and being destructive. It doesn't have to do with the fall of man. And just one verse here, and I've wondered what this meant, and I'd sure like to at this time to throw it out and hear what some of you people are saying. But the 11th chapter of Revelation, the 18th verse, there's three thoughts in it. I'll just read the whole verse. It says, the nations were angry, and your wrath has come. It says, the time has come for judging the dead and for rewarding your servants, the prophets, and your saints, and those who reverence your name, both great and small, or both small and great. And then it goes on, and for destroying those who destroy the earth.
Comforting, huh?
Yeah.
God's going to get even with those who destroyed the earth. And what it raises in my mind is three questions. Is he talking about getting even with the devil and his angels for influencing, controlling man? Is he talking about getting even with man for destroying the earth? Or is he talking about getting even with both entities? Getting even with both the devil and his angels for having influenced man so adversely, and getting even with man too.
I'm going to take the prerogative of the leader here, and okay. I'm looking at the clock, and I'm going to make a comment and end with a passage and try and wrap up what I started to do. And I think this is a good point. I think it would open up a whole new discussion, though. I understand in part God's, in the context that I've introduced this in, and that is that in God's, by choice and freedom, being inseparable from the creation, also building into it some components that that simply will backfire on us if we don't take care of things, and that the wrath really comes in terms of backfiring, as it were, greenhouse effect and so forth, and that really gets to be the wrath that really is our own doing, simply as a built-in component. And I'm gonna leave it at that, and I realize that's not going to be satisfying, but I'm also looking at the clock. I mentioned that that one possibility is that, in terms of the rest, is that it is a recreation time, and obviously that has New Testament implications. And there are implications with New Testament implications with God being with, suffering with, feeling the creation rather than dominating the creation. And one portion of New Testament scripture that I believe at least reflects on that to some degree, and also brings out the concept of a cosmic Christ, which I think we need so much, is from Colossians chapter 2, verses 15 through 20, and I'd like to conclude with that. Speaking of Christ, he is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of all creation, for in him all things were created, in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or principalities or authorities, all things were created through him and for him. He is before all things, and in him all things hold together. He is the head of the body, the church. He is the beginning, the firstborn from the dead, that in everything he might be preeminent. For in him all the fullness of God was pleased to dwell, and through him to reconcile to himself all things, whether on earth or in heaven, making peace by the blood of his cross. I think the passage speaks for itself in the context. So I'm finished.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for reflecting with me.